Welcome back to Planet Waves FM's continuing coverage of the United Astrology Conference here in New Orleans, Louisiana. Today is Monday, the 28th of February. It is the, I guess, next to last day of the conference, though it's our last day of doing interviews. And my first guest this morning is a man named David Tresemer, who splits his time between Boulder, Colorado, and Tasmania, home of my favorite cartoon character, the Tasmanian Devil.
How good for you.
And the question I always ask is, did the box that the Tasmanian Devil arrived in say fragile or handle with care?
Definitely you should handle with care. This is a very vicious animal, which actually doesn't exist on our little island, Flinders Island, but in mainland Tasmania, yes, the Tasmanian Devil is in the bush.
What does he look like?
It's a canine, so it's like a little dog, actually.
Got it. Okay, cool. All right, that's fine.
With sharp teeth.
So he's kind of like a cousin of foxes and wolves and dogs and...
Yeah, yeah.
Got it. That's exciting. I had no idea it was a dog-like critter, because he's up on 2 feet in the cartoon, but that's not what we're here to talk about.
that is a cartoon.
That's cartoonist for you.
Which good, this will segue into what we're about to talk about.
Yes. Yes. How do you forget about that and meet the real Tasmanian Devil? Perhaps.
Exactly.
So you are a Harvard-trained psychologist.
Correct.
And then somehow you had a metamorphosis and incorporated astrology into your work. How did that happen?
Okay. As a graduate student, I was trained that astrology was superstition, complete bunkum. And as a good student, I accepted that. And it was only afterwards, after I got my PhD, I mean, I had fringe interests in Jungian psychology and things like that. But I viewed astrology as kind of a mythological fantasy structure that was sort of interesting. Maybe there were archetypes living there that the Jungians liked to think about, that sort of thing. But it was only after that when people actually challenged me to test it. They said, okay, Mr. Smarty Pants, you've got your PhD, now test astrology. We all know that there's bunkum astrology out there, but there's nothing new about that. But there is good astrology, but go ahead and test it.
Who said that?
This was at the Waldorf School, right? So the great thing about having children is that it takes you into meeting people that you wouldn't meet normally, especially in academics. The academics tend to stay among each other, and they all kind of support each other's belief systems. Odd infinitum. That's why it's called an ivory tower. So they said test it, and I actually did. I set up a rather large experiment where I used statistical methods to test astrology. Probably we don't want to go into the details of that, but in any case, at the end of that...
What was the hypothesis you were testing?
I was looking at the connection between planetary locations and the main fixed stars, the royal stars of Persia, which is Antares, Aldebaran, Fomalhaut, Regulus, and Spica. And in hard aspect. And seeing that statistically, and my data set, the hard part is getting data sets that are worth anything. And the data set that I collected was nuclear accidents between 1941 and 1991.
You have researched nuclear accidents?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's one of my favorite subjects to work on in astrology.
Uh-huh. Well, there were 230 of them. And I was so impressed by the statistical...
correlation, yep.
That I said, oh, okay, this is something I need to study. So I have been studying it ever since, and that's been 18 years or so.
You're still working on nuclear...
No, I've been studying astrology. I said, this convinces me that astrology is important.
Got it.
And I really want to look into this in much greater detail. So I really, that's began my process of studying about astrology.
Are any of those fixed stars in the early to mid-mutable signs tropically?
Tropically, yes.
Because the nuclear axis, the atom splitting chart, you know, the first sustained atomic pile, Chicago 315.
I wrote a whole paper on that. That is so interesting, that particular chart, because it has, from my point of view, it has a Saturn-Sun opposition right on this axis that I find most important, which is Antares Aldebaran.
And basically every nuclear incident, all of them, Three Mile Island, Fukushima, they all have contact with something significant aspecting that Saturn or that Uranus on the nuclear axis. I see this over and over again.
Right.
Who is the editor of Welcome to Planet Earth?
Right.
He did a lot with that nuclear axis chart. I've got to contact him
day.
And get his old articles about that.
He really did some good work on that.
Yeah, and he kind of popularized that chart. It's an amazing chart.
Yeah.
So anyway, good. I'm now very happy to learn that about you. But today we're here to talk about your book, The Venus Eclipse of the Sun, 2012. That's right. How you've been corresponding with one of our editors, Amanda, and I've been watching the email go by. I'm very happy to meet you about this. Now,
Yes. You
have a we were talking about your work at Harvard. I was just asking you. I always ask people with a PhD what they did their thesis on, by the way, so I'm not just picking on you. I always want to know what all that energy went into, what that passion was. So, and what you said, it was about learning how people learn. And
I said, you asked me what did I learn at Harvard, and could I make a soundbite of it? And I said, yes, I learned how to learn.
That's not your PhD thesis topic.
That's the sum total of what I could say if I had to summarize what I learned from all those studies, which were extraordinary, and many experiences, of course.
Reading studies and doing studies.
Yeah. I did a lot of research, also did clinical work in state hospitals and things like that.
Yeah.
Started the process of having clients from a psychological point of view, and dealt with psychopathology in a very deep way, which was brilliant experience. But the main thing is, you ought to come away from education learning how to learn. It's not the content of what your course is about.
Right.
It's the learning how to learn about something completely new and to change your preconceptions, your prejudices, and to let something completely new come in to your field.
And shift your whole thing.
And it shifts your capacity to take in more new. The nervous system is primarily designed to keep things out because we have so much stimulation coming in at any particular moment.
The reducing valve, as Aldous Huxley put it.
Yeah, and you are really good at this because you're sitting here in the middle of a very busy hallway and there are people passing by. And luckily, I've got my back to these people, but you get to... They're all passing.
Waving to me.
They're all passing you, right, and they're waving at you and all that. But you have this ability to filter that out and actually stay on track. And that's what we all do. We actually filter out most information. And we have to but what that can do, and that's a good thing, but what it can do is throw us back on ourselves in a kind of narcissistic reaffirmation of our worldview, so that we are always reinforcing ourselves and living in basically a little cocoon.
Right.
And that's kind of what this Venus eclipse talks about, in my view. Should I just jump into there?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah. So, you know, the rare event here, the reason I wrote this book was that I was so concerned with people, and some of them, my friends, who were just saying, oh, the end of the world in 2012, and that's died down a little bit, this end of the world prediction.
Well, every day that goes by, it becomes statistically less likely to happen, right? I mean...
No.
Well, we've lost half the year.
Right, but December 21st is December 21st, even though October 28th came and went and that sort of thing. But so the end of the world is, I was so concerned about that I said, well, actually there really is an event. There's not, the astrology of December 21st, 2012 is not that significantly different from any other year or any other day. From my point of view, we can talk about that. You're squinting at me.
It took me a while to see it, but it's... pretty special. But anyway, let's go.
All right. Took you a while to see it. But there is this special, there is a very unusual event, which is Venus going across the face of the sun. Yeah, it's coming up relatively shortly.
Which is it's considered one of the rarest predictable events in astronomy.
Mm. So I began to investigate what occurred when this happened before, 1769, 1882, and they come in pairs, 2004 even, and to see, well, what is the symbolism of this just astronomically, mythologically, astronomically, and what lives in that particular degree in the heavens where the sun and Venus will both be when this event occurs. So there are levels here. But the main thing is that if you look at this, well, the main thing comes down to the theory of how we behave. And we create these ideas of the world, and then we empower them. So we have an idea of the world the way it is, or we have an ideal about what ought to happen, and we give it power. And that power can be called eros. Giordano Bruno, a philosopher who flourished in the 16th century, named this process erotic phantasms. Now, I'm going to define that, but it's a beautiful term. I love it. It's catchy. Erotic phantasms. The phantasm is the idea of how things are. The phantasm can be an advertisement. The phantasm can be your curriculum in a school. A phantasm is sort of any idea structure that you have. It's the form. Behind that is eros. Eros doesn't have form. It just has power.
It's energy.
Energy.
Passion. Hormonal movement.
Desire. Love and hate. And it's Venus. So if you can really see Venus as this. So if you see Venus going across the face of the sun, there is going to be, and we're in it now, actually, and will be for some months, maybe some years, but there is an excitement of Eros. Now, Eros looking for phantasms to
animate.
Occupy and to animate. That's the good word. To animate the phantasms, and advertisers will make use of this, do make use of this. You will find Eros arising in you, looking for things to cathect to, that's a good psychological word, to attach to, and to give them extra, to give them meaning. Giving meaning is actually an action of Eros going into a picture. Pictures themselves are not energized. They are only energized by Eros working through you. So the key here is that to realize that this process is happening, happens all the time, and it will happen in greater extremity. You can choose how to direct your Eros once you understand this, and to choose phantasms or ideals or pictures that, or imaginations that you wish to occupy with energy, choosing very positive ones. You mentioned Fukushima, so let's talk about that for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
Fukushima, the fourth reactor is about to blow. That would be more serious than any of the others.
Mm-hmm.
There are whole buildings there full of spent fuel rods that if that building collapsed, which it's on the verge of doing, and all the fuel rods went together, there would be a cataclysm worse than what's happened already.
Yes.
By multiple
magnitude orders.
Magnitude,
yes.
Yeah. So it's very important, you know, that's sort of the picture of how things look. You can actually work with that actively. You can imagine a picture where engineers come together, tell the truth, and are able to fashion a rescue. You can actually create that as a picture in your mind and then invite Eros to amplify it, to occupy it, to animate it. Now, if that's difficult to do, some people have difficulty creating these pictures. If that's difficult to do, then you take the picture of where what you think is actually happening, which is a story. I just told you a story. You know, it's extraordinarily dangerous. It's about to blow, worse than before. I've just told you a story. I don't know if that's factual, because we just live in a world of stories. It depends entirely upon how we interpret things that occur. So all of these things are phantasms. We live in a world of phantasms. Difficult to exit from that. If I can't really imagine a positive outcome of the engineers, the politicians, a positive outcome could be organisms quickly learn the capacity to metabolize radioactivity. That's a positive picture. If I cannot create that picture with enough specificity, then I can actually accept the picture that. And it could be a depressing picture of the Fukushima blowing up and, you know, all the food in the world being destroyed and everybody dying of radiation poisoning. I can, if that's easier for me to do, I can actually hold that picture just before I go to sleep. It's like holding it in my hands. You know, like my hands are shaped in a bowl. I hold the picture of what I see happening and ideally without judgment, and then go to sleep with that. It's like an offering to the spiritual worlds, because then in the time of night, the spiritual beings, my personal angel, my higher self, there is a process that occurs where these things to which we're giving attention are taken up and then brought back to us as some kind of response.
Is that intention necessary to have that thing be transmuted, the negative thought form, the negative phantasm?
Yeah.
Do you need to, or do we just leave that to the higher powers to address for us?
What the higher powers look at is our attention. What we attend to, they perk up. They go, oh, look at that. There's a focus of attention. Very rare in human beings, but there, someone's being really attentive to something. The intention to heal can be there, of course, and the attention to the situation, and it's this focused attention. It's not just going with the flow. If you go with the flow, you're going to end up having the eros of the world and the eros in your own being attached to advertising images, and you'll just, you know, buy more gadgets and more stuff, and, you know, that's going with the flow. But if you actually participate actively with this process, you can take very difficult things, such as these technological things that have gone awry, and find a response to it. Now, the response may not be in words upon awakening. It may be a book falls off a shelf. And I've had this, you know, many people have had this happen, a book actually falling off a shelf and hitting you in the head. And
yeah, there seem to be bookshelf angels that
they really
can
are.
Detect the top of someone's skull when they
just
want.
Really know. They really know when you're coming by, and they just go pop. Or you just notice, it's very interesting, you know, your eyes just going around in the room, and they're just brought to a ding, a connection with some particular thing. You have to. So if you're aware of that sort of thing, that's great. This is actually the way the angels can speak to you during your daytime consciousness.
Well, through synchronicities, things that are subtler,
yes,
even than a book falling off your
yes
shelf.
Yes. Yes, if you begin to become aware of the subtle, I mean, all sorts of things are happening all the time.
Right. Okay, so we have, you're describing a kind of a visualization process and using your imagination to manifest and unmanifest or
right
make offerings. I feel a similar way about, I don't really do predictive astrology, but sometimes I will describe an evil chart and just point it out and say, this chart looks like it could be the chart of some false flag so-and-so.
Mm-hmm.
I suggest we all be aware of this, and it feels like it has a dispelling power.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it harder for anyone who might also use that time for something negative to do so.
I think you're accurate in that. I think actually bringing from the kind of the murky unconscious, bringing that up and naming it as a potentially a difficult or nefarious time, it can be very helpful, very, very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
It brings it into the light, and you can actually sense the disorientation of the retarding beings mm-hmm when they say, oh, we've been found out.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I looked at the degree, actually, where Venus and Sun are occurring, and I'm actually very interested in degrees. I've actually created themes for all the 360 degrees
mm-hmm
based on the events of the life of Jesus Christ, which has been a very...
It's got a gigantic Stations of the Cross.
It's a huge...
360.
Huge. Yeah, 360 Stations of the Cross.
A long service on Sunday. Easter Sunday, it's like, this is going on for a while.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Do 1 degree a day and take a few days off.
Well, let's do 1 degree a year, and we'll take 360 years to do it. So the key piece that really lives in that degree is magical implements, the use of technology for good or ill. And it's the whole history of King Jamshid of Persia and how he was given magical implements, and he used them to apparently make the life of mankind, humanity, easier.
Who was he?
Jamshid. It's in the Zend Avesta.
He's a figure from India?
Persia. So way back.
Okay.
When Zoroaster, in the Zend Avesta, Zoroaster talks to God, and Zoroaster says, is there anyone else you've been talking to except for me? And God says, well, yeah, Jamshid, long before you. So Jamshid was actually given magical implements, various ones. One of them was, a special golden dagger that could measure everything and also start to create furrows, plow the earth, and a magic cauldron in which he could look and see things happening in other times and places,
mm-hmm,
which was the first television. And
the Palantir kind of thing from Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, very interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very similar. And that capacity, which is actually a mechanization of clairvoyant capacity.
Yes. We do a lot of that in our culture.
Yeah.
We have all these little psychic devices that talk to each other.
We mechanize our own skills, and we actually are crippling our own willpower by, you know, the computer is a wonderful thing, but you have to balance it with other kinds of activity where you're actually using your willpower to move your body
right.
in the world and in relationships.
And
with
I think
people.
Use the computer in an active way as opposed to a passive way. I mean, most of us perceive it as an entertainment device.
Uh-huh.
But if you work with it as a learning and creative device, your brain will, more synapses will be flashing.
I agree with that. I agree with that. So, you know, whenever I'm using the computer, I notice that I've got notepaper all around because I'm scribbling this idea, that idea, that idea. And that's what works best for me is actually to scribble by hand.
I know I'm still stuck to a pen, even though I have all the nicest Macintoshes and all this digital gear. I'm like, I gotta have my notebook out.
It feels good. You actually are doing something with your body.
Yes, it's kinesthetic.
One of the...
It's not clay, it's... Ink is still smudgy.
Well,
that.
Clay, that's a good... Because I actually think we need to, as we become more of these thumb kind of people with thumb devices or, you know, typing devices, the hands, you know, that's nice. The hands work well that way, but we need to do something with our hands that actually was how they were originally designed. It may be just simple gardening or working with plants or cooking. Cooking's great.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about a higher order...
If you can talk, if you can use your hands on a regular basis, I mean, these are all ways. We actually need to be now actively thinking about reclaiming our bodies from cyberspace.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I'm with you.
On a regular basis.
I know.
So I make a rule, you know, 40 minutes to computer, 40 minutes up doing things, you know, even if it's you're rearranging your closet. Even if you rearranged your closet last week, it's actually working with your body, your eye-hand coordination with the things of the world. And it's great if you want to work with clay. Clay is so responsive, and you engage in this magic of creating something.
I always sculpt a pussy. The first thing that I do when I get my hands in clay, I've got a whole collection of them. I can't seem to sculpt anything else. That's just what comes out as a vulva. Every time.
We're not talking about a little
clay.
Cat.
No.
No. These aren't kitty cats.
All kinds of elaborate, you know, four-lipped and all this kind of stuff. I can make a little museum out of them, actually.
That's great.
So I have this one thing that I sculpt.
That's great. So, you see, you've got something that into which you can invest Eros right away.
I put it into everything. I figured out. I have a therapist who understood that Eros is the basic fuel of consciousness.
Right.
And who taught me that and pointed out the obvious, what is obvious once you notice it. And so I've been living that for 20, 30 years. You know, I met him 20 years ago, and I was onto it before then, but he said, well, it's really all Eros. It's just a matter of how you direct it, basically.
Uh-huh.
And so I knew that, and I've always felt that, and it was, I had no conflict with it, basically. It was not counterintuitive for me. It was just, that's nice.
Breathe. So what positive picture, Eric, what positive picture would you create that you could get very specific about, which you could invest, you could direct Eros towards?
A personal or collective or whatever I want.
You can choose whatever you want. It could be having to do with Wonderful Planet Wave. It could have to do with your personal life. I mean, just can you think of something right now?
Yeah. Well, my next career is science fiction author, so
mm-hmm.
I'm directing more of my energy into that as a conscious
uh-huh.
movement. I'm learning how to play electric guitar.
Okay, let's pick one of those.
Okay, let's pick electric guitar.
Okay, so do you imagine what kind of guitar? Is it a bass guitar? Or
it's a regular
guitar.
Six-string electric.
Electric? Mm-hmm. And what brand is it?
G&L.
Uh-huh, and what color is
American
it?
American-made. It's a sunburst with a with an oak fingerboard, so it's a slippery, white-colored fingerboard.
Now, is the vision, is it playing it, or is it playing it for people?
I more imagine playing it. I more imagine not quite for an audience. I'm not averse to it, but I more think of composing and recording and sculpting the sound with that.
Okay, now...
So it starts with that... I love the sensation of the guitar in my hands, that kinesthetic feeling of the
right.
strings and bending the strings and the uh-huh. way the instrument feels.
Uh-huh. So what, when you say sculpting sound, is there a gesture that you could make with your hands right now that would... There he's making a gesture. There is great. That is a great gesture. That's not the gesture that one would be doing holding a guitar, because your hands are pretty constrained to particular positions just to make the sound.
Yes, but it's subtle. But subtly, you have a lot of flexibility. Your hands are constrained, but your fingers need to be doing very interesting things.
Yeah.
That my teacher can do that I can't do.
And the gesture that you just made is a gesture that you can add in to a picture of you playing the electric guitar, right? That's part of the whole picture of you playing the electric guitar, an essential part, because you did that with passion.
Yes, and I felt like expanding interior space. That was when I... Well, what did that feel like? It felt like stretching something from the inside and pushing it out.
Right. So that's the kind of thing, with that level of specificity and even greater specificity, to make it as complete as possible, because Eros is here, and it's coming, and it's going to be just like a zing. If that picture suddenly could be energized and animated and made real, you'd be ready for it. But if you don't have pictures, then won't be ready for it.
So you're saying prepare with new concepts, new images.
Well, this wasn't new for you, but the newness would be to be increasingly specific, and the gesture was new.
The gesture was new, right? So that opened up a little dimension.
Uh-huh.
But you're suggesting that people be prepared with thought forms ready to be animated by this surge of energy that's coming through, and hoist ourselves and do it and take a ride on it. That we have the illustrations or the concepts that will be energized by this event.
Right.
Now, have you noticed the series of occultations of Pluto and the Capricorn moon? You might like this.
Yes.
Okay, so there's about 16 of them, and it started in April, I believe. And the last time it happened was when Pluto was in Cancer. So it seems to happen on the Cancer-Capricorn axis, which I think... No, that's not the... It's the nodes of Pluto. Okay, that's interesting. So every time there's a Moon-Pluto conjunction, now, this year and into next year, it is an occultation.
Wow.
So there's one of those about 4 hours after the transit of Venus, before the transit of Venus, there's a partial eclipse of the moon. So we have a concentration of three completely different types of eclipse-like events. The moon is eclipsed, then Venus crosses the sun, the equivalent of an eclipse of the sun by Venus, and then there's an eclipse of Pluto by the moon. So all kinds of odd characters are doing the eclipsing of unusual things in a very concentrated time. And I think that we haven't ever really thought about Moon-Pluto occultations for a while. They're so rare. Hardly anybody was around when the last set happened.
Right.
And I only happened to have access to this tool that my friend wrote that I saw them and got excited about them. But it seems like a breakdown of these cathexized patterns that you were describing, the tendency of the mind to arrange things in patterns that it then either gets trapped in or thinks it can't change.
Right.
Or forgets that it can change, whatever the case may be.
Right.
And that it's this beautiful sensation of this hormonal, passionate Dionysian power of Pluto kind of melting away at the cathexized Capricorn moon and making contact with the passion inside all of that and wearing away at the old be good thought forms and do goody good type of look good but don't worry about if you're evil thought forms connected with Capricorn sometimes, and bringing through the passionate aspect of Capricorn and Pluto and wearing away at those old emotional patterns. Maybe they came from mom and dad, wherever they came from, childhood. And it's happening over and over and over again, like things often need to happen to learn a new pattern.
Right.
But there's one right with the Venus transit of the sun.
Yep, that's very good.
So.
Yeah, it's always, we always have a thousand things happening.
But this is these eclipse-like events concentrated.
Right next to one another.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I'm sure you're familiar with people who as human beings, we have the ability to ignore any of these effects and to numb ourselves so we see that nothing happens and we go away and say, astrology, nothing happens. But actually things do happen, and we actually learn that primarily by hindsight. And the task is to bring our learnings from hindsight up to the present and use them. Mm-hmm. And to say, hey, watch what you're thinking. watch what your eyes gaze upon. I would actually say be very careful about what you put your attention toward, because it's going to be eroticized. It's going to be empowered in this particular time, these days, these months. You know, you're thinking about, well, I don't know whether to go see this horror movie. You know, that's my kids want to go, but should I go? No, this is just the time not to do that, not to be investing your energy, your precious energy, in things that you don't want to live with for the next 20, 30, 50 years.
Yeah, the rest of your life. I mean, this is the next one of these is in 2117. We're setting patterns for multiple generations here.
Yeah.
I often wonder what they're going to look like, think about us when they look back on our civilization in a couple of hundred years and try to figure out what the hell we were thinking that we didn't, for example, shut down all the nuclear power plants.
Well,
I guess it depends on what we do. What they think depends on what we actually do. But we're not doing very much right now to solve our problems.
So I often think there's an image that I often think of, which was something I experienced when I was much younger. It was actually in Cape Cod, Massachusetts, during my college career. And a whale had beached. So on one side of the whale, you had people running to the water and putting soaking towels in the water, and then bringing them and, you know, putting the towels on the skin
to keep it wet.
Yeah. To keep it wet, because actually whales can get sunburned, and that's a terrible thing. It's not a problem with air, because they breathe air. That's fine. But they were waiting for the tide to come in, and meanwhile they're running back and forth putting towels on. And on the other side of the whale, people were carving their initials into the whale. So you realize at all times this kind of polarity is occurring. And it's what you want to choose, where you want to choose to put your attention.
And that can tip the balance
in
a large
instance,
way.
I personally think Fukushima depends on people imagining positive outcomes in a specific way, not a woo-woo, just peace on earth. I mean, that's really great, but you have to get specific. Because the angels really respond to specific attention. And intention is shown by the specificity of your attention. So that's best.
Focus, what you focus on increases.
Yes.
As the Course in Miracles says, thoughts increase by being given away.
Yes.
So therefore, spread the word.
Yes.
That this conversation will not appear behind a paywall. There's no advertisements on it. Just want to hear you and
good.
Me talking to you.
Good.
So that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. So that's, there's so many, you know, I love this kind of work. And one of the things I look at is historical personalities, both their births and their deaths. I really spend a lot of time looking at the death of people.
How they left the planet.
Yeah. What was their legacy? And I'm actually looking at the legacy, their death chart as their legacy chart. And I relate that to particular degrees in the heavens, and you know where they went out. If they went out where you came in with your first breath, their last breath and your first breath, that's very interesting to me. And I think that's something that I go into that in this Venus Eclipse book, plus some of my other books.
You're talking about people who died around the time that you were born, or even the very day that you were born.
Same gate, same degree.
Ah.
Prior to your birth, I actually find that people up to about your age 10, if they died, you know, you're still very, you know, attuned to that level, impressionable. But especially if they died before you were born, then, the logical mind can handle that. Logical mind has somewhat more difficult time about up to age 10. So that's fine. So I've been actually linking people with their, what I call their potential mentors, people who died at the same degree as when they were born.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that these could be extremely helpful mentors to you. And their greatest asset is that they are dead. They actually know spiritual realms.
And they may be quite available.
And so I have a little process called Tea with Your Mentor, where I actually suggest a process by which you can invite
them in,
this person, and imagine having tea. I don't say, imagine you have no boundaries and they have no boundaries and you're sort of all wishing together.
That's a bit conceptual.
That's, well, whoa, what? It may be truer, but it's actually, but if I say, imagine a table and there's a pot of tea. You can choose the tea, and there's a two cups, and imagine what color the cups are. And there's this person there, and there's, you're here, and you're sitting, and you're actually having a conversation. And you can actually put questions and then take in impressions. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the ways that I've been working.
Well, this is an awesome message for the transit of Venus.
Excellent.
And I'm going to run this as high up the flagpole as I possibly can, give it its own page, and stick it on Facebook and make sure that everybody hears it. So there you go. David Tresemer, Harvard-trained astrologer who works in human ecology and has given us basically the message of get your ideas in the most tangible visual form that you can, and sensory form, and allow the energy of this transit of Venus to animate them with the beautiful mobile power of Eros.
Yes.
And don't be scared of her. She's very nice.
No, she's very,
she's everything. You. She's everything, yes. Yes, yes. There's light and shadow and all that, but shadow is different than evil.
Yeah, it's true.
A lot of witches are like, oh, it's all good, but there really is something. The Kal power is another conscious manipulation to it's almost like the LSD of evil that is not in the normal balance of light and shadow.
Right.
And so we are pretty safe in the normal balance of life and shadow, I think. And then
right.
we can learn how to deal with the larger unmitigated evil as we grow and master our skills.
Yes, good.
And one of the things you do is not to put too much attention into it. Learn only what you need to know to do what you have to do.
Pay attention to what you want to pay attention to and what you want to have with you for the rest of your life.
But one of the traps of people who, as a former investigative reporter or kind of currently weird type of investigative reporter, is you have to go into the darkness, and a lot of practitioners of magic feel like, oh, I better learn the dark side and all that stuff. But what I'm suggesting here is only do that to the minimal extent necessary and
yep.
keep your energy on what you're creating and what you're affirming, your focus of attention on that, and
right.
you're much safer in all realms.
Yep.
So
yep.
there you go.
Good advice.
Now
good
I'm
advice
doing
all around.
Which rolls a little bit. So once again, thank you, David. You're listening to Planet Waves FM's continuing coverage of the United Astrology. We haven't hardly said anything about the conference. The United Astrology Conference in New Orleans, Louisiana. We're signing off from this interview at about 11:17 on Monday, the 28th of May. We've got an interesting lineup of guests planned today, including this guy, Dael, who's been living with the Mayans, and then somebody named Rebecca, who I know from the Nightlight Astrology School, and Kelly, who's going to talk about the Black Moon Lilith, and then we'll see who else the tide washes in while the microphones are still set up. All right, signing off for now.